Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Leonard Wilson, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, we have Leonard back. We had, I think it's been, what, gosh, 6-7 months since you've been on. I think it was it was February?
Yeah, it's been a little while.
But yeah, Leonard's back on. He's our second guest appearance on the Fat Guys at the Movie Show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to remind everybody who Leonard is and all that good stuff. But before we do that, let's get to the paperwork. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and you can search through all of our, poke through all of our stuff we've got up there. We've got different podcasts. We've got movie reviews, DVD spots, and even some interviews and some fun stuff. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and you'll get all of our shows. And some of our other shows, like we had The Idiot Boxers, which was a TV about TV, and we've discontinued that. We're starting a new podcast, Oh Snap, we're going to be starting that in September, so you can watch the feed for that, and I think we actually have the feed live for that, but it's a prologue episode, so you can subscribe to it now, so it'll start showing up in your iTunes when we start releasing new episodes. You can go to the Fat Guys Facebook page, which is facebook.com/FGATM. You can like us and send us a message and subscribe to one of the updates that way as well. And you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, and you can leave us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. No voicemails this week, but you can reach us through Facebook or email or voicemail if you ever want us to say anything interesting to you. You can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr and reach me and hear all my brilliance, and that's it for just the basic paperwork of this. But I'd like to reintroduce the audience, everyone, to Leonard Wilson.
Hello.
Tell us who you are and what you do, Leonard. I know who you are, but
I hate you on the spot things. My name is Leonard, as has been mentioned. My handle on Twitter is Kvatica. That's named after the spider in Charlotte's Web. I just like the book.
That's right. I remember I asked you that last time and I totally forgot, and the second you mentioned Charlotte's Spider, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that.
I write reviews on a site called Through the Shattered Lens, and I've also joined Kevin here with the Saturday Night Live tweet that he has. Yes. Every Saturday.
Yeah, and I just published the new schedule for that. So if you want to figure that out, you can go to the Fat Guys of the Movies, and there's a link on the top of the page for the late night live tweet. I think the one we got coming up this week is Leviathan.
Oh, sweet. Oh, that's great.
The 80s craptastic, terribly bad movie about monsters under the deep. Well, sort of. I don't want to give anything away.
Oh, man.
1989, starring Tom Bray.
Mm.
Is it Tom Bray in that movie?
Tom Bray, I don't know if he was in it. I know it was Colonel Troutman. He was in it. And that crazy one-eyed girl. I can't remember her name. Meg Foster with the blue eyes.
Oh, the eyes. Yeah. I saw her at a Horror Hound Festival once.
Really?
And she's very tiny. She's not at all. For some reason, I always pictured her as a... And a lot of people are like, you picture her as being taller.
She seems like she would be.
But she always looked like she was... You know, a little more formidable. Maybe it was because Rutger Hauer wasn't very tall. I don't know.
Well, maybe.
But she was like in, and maybe part of it was also because she was in like They Live with Roddy Piper. So
right. That guy's Master of the Universe with Frank Langella.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these are tall guys. You know, especially They Live. You have Keith David and Piper, and they're both big dudes.
Yeah,
and
they're huge guys.
In real life, if you put her next to him, I think she would be probably about the size of one of their legs. She was tiny. But her eyes, I mean, she like looked up in her eyes and then like these like blue lasers came and just cut through the entire room. So yeah, they still work.
Like moon blinking in an owl movie.
So yeah, we got that. And I think next week is the following week. We've got the Terminator. We're going to live tweet the original Terminator. And we're also going to live tweet... I know we got Hard Target coming up, but I think that's later. We got Galaxy of Terror and Dante's Peak. That's what it is. We're going to be doing Dante's Peak.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
James Bond versus the volcano. That was the other volcano movie because it came out the same year as
the Tommy Lee Jones one, the Volcano.
Volcano.
Right. Anne Heche.
Which is another one that's just terrible.
No, that's really bad.
Blisteringly, hilariously bad. But anyways, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay, so you were done? You were done with
yeah,
who
I was
you
done.
Are? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know Leonard from Twitter, and we actually got to know each other through doing a lot of the live tweets, and so it's always nice to have him on. And he has some good writing out there. You do some TV coverage, don't you?
Yeah, I've been trying to work on TV review writing. I usually do movie writing. I've been doing that a lot, but I've been trying to venture into the TV reviewing. Everyone else at the Shattered Lens has been doing a really wonderful job at covering TV shows. We've been covering True Blood, and I've been trying to do the Newsroom, but admittedly, the last few episodes I've been supposed to write, and I find that I have to watch each episode at least 4 to 5 times just to be able to kind of grasp what I'm working on. It's really hard, but
that's a heavily written show.
It's just a little more difficult than I'm used to.
Well, but in the Newsroom is a very heavily written show. There's a lot going on dialogue-wise and character-wise. Right? There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of characters, and it's totally driven by dialogue. And being Sorkin, you know how he kind of writes. And it's not so much what's being written. It's just that you have so many characters to follow over a long series that I'm not quite certain whether or not I'm supposed to just say this happened and then that happened and then this happened, or am I just supposed to give a synopsis of how I felt watching it? It's very different from writing about movies for the most part. But again, it's an adjustment period. I'm learning.
Okay, cool. Oh, well, with that, you know, let's jump into the first movie and talk about that we're going to talk about this week. And that is The Possession.
Bible.
It's The Possession. A girl finds a box at a garage sale that releases a Dubik that possesses her.
Daddy, can I get this?
Kiddo,
something in there.
Well, that's weird. There aren't any seams.
What does that mean?
I think whoever made this didn't want anybody to open it.
I have no idea what I've got here.
Hebrew inscriptions. It says Dybbuk.
And where are you?
It's the Hebrew word for demon.
What does this thing want with my daughter?
The spirit is the taker of children.
Him.
A Dybbuk?
A Dybbuk is a Jewish demon.
Like the Unborn.
Or Dybbuk? Is it a Dybbuk or Dybbuk?
I think it's Dybbuk. I remember that movie, The Unborn, by David Goyer.
Yes, The Unborn. They mentioned it in The Unborn. They also mentioned it in, of all movies, A Serious Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because that opens with a Dybbuk storyline, a Dybbuk.
Okay.
I don't know what to think of this movie.
I don't know. To me, it's the same as the, what was it, The Devil Inside and...
Oh, don't even start. That movie was so bad.
I didn't even try it. I didn't even give it a try.
That movie was embarrassing.
I stopped after the right. Don't get me wrong. I think everyone's trying to come up with, like, the next Exorcist. Yeah. And in their attempt of doing so, they're just trying to throw more jolts and more in your face. It's gotten to the point where everything you see nowadays anyway are just those slothing faces you see from The Ring anyway. So
yeah.
It's I don't know. I'm not sure that's going to work for me. But I do like, Dean Morgan?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Morgan. He's a good actor. So I don't know if I would run to see it, but it might be a DVD rental.
I might slowly sashay to this movie.
I might slide into it, but that's where I'm gonna go.
I have an affinity for sort of these low budget horror movies because even though like The Apparition was last week, which was not a great movie, but it was fun enough.
Ashley Green.
Yeah, she's hot. Yeah. But no, I mean, I like Case 39 was one that I really enjoyed. That kind of was surprising.
Okay.
That's the one with Renee Zellweger who dealing with a possessed child or demon child.
I didn't know she still made movies.
Yeah, well, she did a couple years ago at least. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll check this one out at midnight. They didn't screen it for us because it's Lionsgate. So it gets a preemptive suck. But with that, we're going to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were talking a little bit about The Possession. We won't tell you what we were talking about during break. We were searching through our folders on our computers that are specially marked. Let's just say our specially marked.
We'll leave it at that.
Our celebrity research folders.
We'll just say that.
Speaking of Ashley Green, you can draw your own conclusions there. The Apparition. The Apparition wasn't terrible. It wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like the worst. It wasn't The Devil Inside. Part of it wasn't found footage, so it worked.
Well, that's a plus. I mean, I'm pretty tired of found footage ones.
Yeah, so I mean, The Apparition was sort of this very sanitized PG-13 horror movie that's going to scare 12-year-olds at a slumber party, and that's about it. And I think that The Possession is going to be a scarier movie. At least the trailers make it look scarier. It's less gimmicky.
Okay.
And what's funny about The Apparition is they build it as the more you believe, the one who believes is the one who's going to get killed. That's not what it's about.
Really?
Spoiler, it's not at all about what the trailer says it is.
Oh, that sucks. And then you gotta be going in and thinking one thing and then you get something totally different.
Yeah, because I was like about 2/3 of the way through and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not, this movie has nothing to do. I kept waiting for that twist to be thrown in and I'm like, it never was.
I hate that. They do it with trailers sometimes and they show you one scene in the trailer that you can't wait to see and that one scene never shows up in the film.
Predators.
Yeah.
Yeah, Predators. Mm-hmm. There's only one laser beam on him.
That's right, one laser beam. The trailer had like 15 lasers on him. Yep. Nope, this one.
And I saw somebody was like, well, you know, and we talked about The Gray. We were talking about The Gray offline. He's like, we wanted some wolf punching in that movie, and then didn't get it.
No, didn't get any wolf punching. I would have paid so much to see Liam Neeson knock out a wolf. That would have much for his career.
And I said to Leonard in the break, when I saw the Taken 2 trailer, they should have just at the end just thrown in a picture of him punching a wolf. Just throw it in and be like, yeah, guess what our movie has? It has this. Bam!
If people would run to that, they would totally run to that.
And that was funny is that when I saw that trailer, what was it playing ahead of? The Bourne Legacy. And he's punching a wolf in that movie.
Yeah.
Shoving things down its throat. So, yeah. But that was the thing with The Apparition. The Possession, which is so funny because it's this 1-2 punch of like cheesy, unscreened horror movies in August, September. August. These are both August releases, which is always odd. I mean, it's one thing to release a horror movie in January, which is a little out of place, but they drop a lot of them in January. But August, I'm like, just wait like 6 weeks, 5-6 weeks, you're in Halloween. I mean, if a movie is, if you really don't think a movie's going to survive, a horror movie can't survive in October, how good can it be?
Yeah, it'd be, yeah. I think Saw is the only one they do nowadays where they actually put it out in October, but a lot of those horror movies really miss the mark. I mean, right at the beginning of October would be fine. You don't have to put it out right on Halloween week, but...
Well, they were at one point, it was when Saw was in its heyday, everyone got out of the way of Saw. They did not want to compete with Saw.
Yeah.
So no one dropped a horror movie in October. They dropped them in August, they dropped them in September, they dropped them in January, but they never dropped them in October. And then you saw them start coming back a couple years ago when the Saw movie started to wane. I remember there was one year where the only other horror movie that came out in October was with the Rec remake. What was that? Quarantine.
Oh, Quarantine. The second one or the first one?
The first one. The second one. Quarantine 2 never hit the trailer. It hit the theaters.
Oh.
That was direct-to-video. But, oh, wow. But this one, but they are dropping some horror-related stuff. Like Frankenweenie, even though it's not a scary movie, it's it's genre-related. It's a Halloween kind of movie.
That's Disney scary.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think Paranorman was dumped earlier, because I think they were afraid of competition with that. And Paranorman was a fantastic genre-based film. But then they, you know, I think they got another one. There's another one dropping right at the beginning of October. I forget the name of it, but there's a horror movie there, and they're going to be Paranormal Activity 4, of course.
Yeah, another Paranormal Activity. How many times that girl could just get a... He's just kidnapping children all over the place. Yeah. Seriously.
I think they're, in general, on the whole of the three, I like the first and the third pretty well. So we'll see what this fourth one is. I think Paranormal Activity, the whole found footage thing, is going to end up like... sort of like torture porn.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's already there, I think.
Yeah, I think where everyone's making it and it's doing great and then suddenly won't.
Yeah.
Same thing with J-Horror. I mean, J-Horror remakes were huge and everyone was doing them and then suddenly people lost interest.
Wait, J-Horror?
Well, you know, Asian horror films.
Oh, Japanese horror, right. Audition or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, I mean, like, they did, like, One Missed Call, and they did The Eye, and these were not doing well. And it was just, you know, you had The Grudge, you had The Ring.
I forgot about that.
That was so bad.
Oh, my God.
Shannon Sossaman and
Pulse.
Oh, Pulse was another one. Although, was that a remake? Or I
think
remember.
That was a remake. Kristen Bell and Kristen Bell Christina Milian.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Wow. See, you know your horror movies. So I don't. I'm being cautiously optimistic about The Possession, just because I'm curious to see it. It looks like they have something happening there. And
I don't know. I like Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Like we were saying before, I think that he's okay in movies like this. But then again, he did do The Losers, so that's not saying a lot.
I like The Losers.
It's not bad, but it's, you know. Ugh.
The next film we're going to talk about is sort of similar. It's the Oogie Loves in the Big Blue Adventure. It's preschool programming comes to the big screen and melts parents' brains worldwide.
We're the Oogie Loves!
And it's time for all you kids to get out of your seats and join us.
Join Goofy, Susie, and me, Toofy, for a whole new interactive movie-going experience where singing along, dancing along, and playing along are all part of the movie fun.
Can I borrow your blanket, please?
Now I'm moving.
From the marketing visionary of Teletubbies, Thomas the Tank Engine and Friends, and Eloise.
I'd like Sweet Pickle, Dill Pickle, Warm Pickle, Chill Pickle, please.
Okay.
This probably went completely under your radar because you don't have kids.
No, I wouldn't. And this is someone who went to see Winnie the Pooh the weekend it came out. I never know about this one.
Well, yeah, because Winnie the Pooh's awesome.
Oh, of course.
But no, the Oogie Loves is a... It's a Teletubbies-esque kind of preschool programming that's just, it's not like from a TV show, though. I mean, somehow the people involved with Teletubbies are somehow peripherally involved in it. It's audience participation. It's for kids. I mean, I'm actually considering taking my four-year-old just because he's four. I mean, he'd like that movie.
I think the younger kids will probably like it. I mean, in a weekend where... You've got one big scary movie for adults, and who knows what else. For kids, if they've already seen Paranorman, this might be an okay alternative.
Yeah. Oh, there's an interesting. I'll tell you this story about Paranorman in the middle segment. Remind me to ask me about Paranorman. So,
okay.
Oogie Loves gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. Although I'm curious. I mean, I'm not expecting much. And if you go and watch this movie and be like, it's totally stupid and repetitive and these big bright colors and blah, 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 sing, sing, sing. That's exactly what preschool programming is. I watch it all the time with my kid, you know, Yo Gabba Gabba and garbage like that, which connects to a child,
right.
You know, with a brain of a four-year-old.
That's kind of mean.
I was just saying, they're 4 years old. It's not an insult. Kids are dumb at that age. They may be smart kids, but you know, you don't want to put them, you know, he's not exactly like you're going to put them in the war room of the pet. Well, maybe you could. I don't know.
You never know. Well, like Call of Duty, I mean, they could be ready.
But that's, I mean, you can't sit there and be like, you can't like play, you can't play a game of chess with a four-year-old and be like, I beat you, you idiot. Because they're four and he should beat you.
Beat me.
You should beat them. And if your four-year-old beats you in chess, you either have a really smart four-year-old or you're an idiot. So it's one of the two. All right, let's move on to the next movie. That one is Lawless, and in this movie, a gang of criminals fight against a new deputy during Prohibition.
We got a chance to make a good stack of money here.
Pure corn whiskey, it's a white Latin.
It's impressive.
I respect you, Bob Rast.
You want any more of this stuff?
As much as you can bring me.
There's a new special deputy. Been brought in from the city.
To work it out so everybody can do some business.
That's all.
I'm the one who's going to make your life real difficult from now on if you don't toe the line, country boy.
We got about a minute, so tell me what are your initial thoughts on this movie?
Okay,
you didn't screen this one either.
I do like the cast. You got Tom Hardy, you got Gary Oldman, Jessica Chastain. I mean, they're all pretty good. The only weak person, I think...
Everyone, almost everybody who was in The Dark Knight Rises.
Pretty much. It's like a crossover for that, a layover. Everybody just said, okay, we're moving on to this one.
Does Tom Hardy, does he talk like a cartoon walrus in this movie?
I hope not. I hope it's not one of those...
We got Prohibition, Mr. Sheriff.
I love liquor, yes. But it's Shia. Shia is the one that worries me. After Transformers and Wall Street, I think that we've gotten to the point where we've seen him run his course. Not in terms that he can't do movies, but it's the same Shia over and over
again.
He's
not that good.
Yeah, and he's hit that Channing Tatum state kind of. Well, actually, I can't say that because he's had a bit
of a resurgence. I mean,
yeah, he's done a bit better since then. I take that back. But Shia, I don't know. Post Broken Hand, he hasn't been the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to. There's not much hype to this. I don't see a whole lot of stuff about this. I'm gonna go see it, but I have very little expectations. So
I don't know.
It gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. But with that, we actually have to go to a break now.
Mm-hmm. 22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in our infamous middle segment where you can swear, Leonard.
Yes, nice. Shit.
There you go. Drop something. He's like, you're like, yeah, nice. Oh, you want me to say something?
Yeah, it didn't occur to me. I told that.
In the break, we should have been talking about this. In the break, we had a long discussion about Olivia Munn. And because Leonard's a huge fan of Olivia Munn. And she should be talking to us. That's all there is to it. We have just mapped out her career for her.
Yes.
And not, I mean, she's doing well. She's doing fine now. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. She's paying her rent.
Yeah, the news, she's doing good in the newsroom.
But here's my business plan, because I know she listens, of course. Here's what she needs to do, because we talk, because every time she shows up in a movie, it's like she's trying to do serious acting, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think she seriously wants to be an actress, but she is in fact a sex symbol, and she's a sex symbol for geeks, and while she's embraced that level of sex symbol, she hasn't enveloped herself in it. She hasn't allowed herself to become immersed in it necessarily to the point that, like, if she did the next Transformers movie, She'd probably be pretty good in that.
You figure the comic fan base that's already kind of, well, I wouldn't say comic fan base is following her, but with the whole Comic-Con and stuff like that, I'm pretty sure they would all run it out.
The geek fan base.
Yeah.
And she is at least as attractive as Megan Fox. And I think she is way better actor than Megan Fox. Even if I'm just going on what I've seen her in stuff like Magic Mike, where she shows her tits. I don't know how she does it.
I didn't even try that movie. I as a fan, I really should have, but I just, I can't.
It's not a good movie, and she's not good in it. I mean, everything about that movie is shit.
I can't sit through Sarah Jessica Parker that long. I mean, it's 30 minutes of Sex and the City might have been okay to tolerate, Scanners Like Pain, but I don't know about a full-fledged movie.
Sex in the City is genius Oscar-winning material compared to, I don't know how she does it. But this is what she should do. This is my idea for Olivia Munn. And so, Olivia, if you're listening, and we know you are, because you scour our website every day.
Wow.
What you need to do is you need to find some geek based movie. Something, I use the example of Fanboys. If you remember that movie from a couple years ago, where the guy's going to go steal the print of the new Star Wars
episode one, Jay Baruchel
you find a movie like that that's coming out that's high profile, and you negotiate that you're going to show your tits. Even though you did a Magic Mike, I didn't recognize that was you, and it wasn't well lit. So we need to see more of this.
I totally didn't see that. I really wish I had it. Now that I know, I mean, I was told about that with the weekend that it came out.
Yeah.
But I just totally didn't go see.
Well, what's funny about it is I was telling Leonard off the air that when I saw the movie, I didn't recognize her voice because I'm not as huge of a fan, and so you don't really see her. She's not in well lit. So her hair is kind of in front of her face. And then I realized, I'm like, oh my God, that was Olivia Munn. But I couldn't hit the back. I couldn't hit rewind. And this is what I said to said to Leonard. I go, knowing that it's her is half the fun. Of actually looking at the, because otherwise you're just like, oh, look, tits. You know, it's a stripper movie. Big deal. And you're like, whoa, wait, those were her tits. So what she needs to do is pick a movie like a Fanboy, some geek level movie that a lot of geeks are at least going to pay attention to. She should just walk on, show her tits, and walk off and get like paid $1 million for it.
That sounds like Heather Locklear and Snapped and Zapped or something like that, in a way.
Heather Thomas.
That's right. Thomas, right. I'm thinking for the Fall Guy. I'm getting that mixed up. But you're right. Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. But see, she did kind of hold her own in the newsroom. I will give her that. I mean, granted, it wasn't perfect, it's
but see, that's her doing this. I mean, that's a serious acting gig. That's a, that's not a Fanboy thing.
That's true. You're working with Sorkin, so you kind of have to kind of up your game.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, and I, you know, I got an axe to grind with these young celebrities who, the women who are like, I won't do nude scenes. Because here's the deal. You will.
Wow.
You will be doing nude scenes. When you're like in your mid to late 30s or God, in your 40s, you're going to be doing your nude scene. It's sort of like, and the great example I use is Marissa Tomei.
Okay.
Marissa Tomei was just fucking adorable in the 90s.
Yeah,
oh,
Different
my
World,
God.
Right.
Adorable.
My Cousin Vinny.
She was
Untamed Heart?
Crazy Heart. Yeah, Untamed Heart. Yeah, yeah, which is the creepiest movie in the world.
Yeah.
And like even like romantic comedies like Only You, she was adorable. And no, she wouldn't do nude scenes. But then it's suddenly like no one was casting her, even though she won an Oscar. And then it's like, oh, we're in the 2000s. Guess what? I'm going to be naked in everything now.
Yeah, that's kind of like a Halle Berry and Swordfish. Didn't Jennifer Aniston kind of go
that
way?
No, she didn't, that fucker. No, and here's the other thing. This is what my industry pisses me off, because it's like, they're like, oh, she's doing a topless scene. And it's not that she's topless under a lab coat, for Christ's fucking sake. That's not topless. It's like when Miley Cyrus, and this is not me bitching about what Miley Cyrus needed to do a nude scene when she was 16, but when that photo scandal where that Annie Leibovitz thing, when she her dad was in the, no, it's the fans got upset about because she was topless, but if you look at the photos, she's in a sheet. That's not topless.
The one that she did with her dad.
Does, in fact, have a top on. It's not a shirt, but it's not like her tits are. And you didn't even see side boobs. You literally see more in just a bikini. And it's just ridiculous for this, that the people be like, oh, it's topless. I'm like, it's not topless.
Nah,
it's like, Kristen Stewart did a movie, and they're like, oh, she's going topless. And I'm like, and then I read through it, and I'm like, oh, well, it's topless, but you don't see anything. I'm like, then it's not fucking topless then, is
no,
it?
No, that's not exactly quite right. Yeah. I'd like to think that Basic Instinct kind of changed things.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea of topless.
Well, that wasn't
overall,
topless. That was, it was,
yeah,
not
that,
the topless.
That, yeah,
that
was
that.
A lot. That was a lot more than topless. But I think that overall.
Do you want to know what fucking idiot Sharon Stone is? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll tell you how stupid Sharon Stone is. Continue what you're saying.
No, I was just saying that. I think we give too much attention. Not too much attention. Maybe not enough. But I think just that nipples are just considered bad things for some reason. I still don't know why. I really don't. I mean, if it worked for Batman and Robin,
I love nipples.
I'm sure it could work.
I'm a huge fan of nipples. I have great respect for nipples. And I like to examine them and be a part of them whenever I can.
Yeah, that's nothing wrong with that.
You're like, I think this is what we can all agree
on. How we
on.
Segued into all this. You get from Olivia Munn to breasts and nipples, and now the show just gone off this weird tangent.
Let me tell you what an absolute fucking moron Sharon Stone is. I saw an interview with her where she was talking about the famous interrogation scene in Basic Instinct where
she
uncrosses her leg.
Scene in the world, I heard.
And what's funny about that is if you actually watch it, it's not much. You kind of see a little bit of vagina lips, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
But it's kind of like if Mick Jagger like ran by you really quickly, that's what it looked like.
Ew. So, I think it's Steven Tyler suddenly talking real fast and they just kind of cut it.
Steven Tyler. Oh my God. He has a mouth vagina if anyone ever had a mouth vagina. But I saw her, she was talking about Paul Verhoeven, and she was like, I didn't know they were doing it. And I'm like, really? And she's like, oh, well, what had happened was I had this white dress on, and I had a panty line, so he asked me to take my underwear off. And I'm like, really? Seriously? They lit your pussy.
Nice. Know what that sounds like? That sounds exactly like the girl who didn't realize that Neil Patrick Harris was doing more than giving her a massage in the Harold and Kumar Christmas movie.
But eventually she caught on.
She caught on.
Well, you know, it also reminds me. I saw this once. Suzanne Summers,
yes,
who of course, played Chrissy on Three's Company.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking about. She literally was in an interview, and she was still insisting that she did not get pregnant by having sex.
Really?
She claimed that they were. I don't know what she was. I think she claimed that they were like. Dry humping or something?
Well,
and I guess
the way you gotta get pregnant. There's only a few ways that I know.
I can't imagine.
We're talking sci-fi here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that those sperm just marched up your leg, unzipped your fly, pulled aside your panties, and crawled into your cervix.
Like Slither.
Yeah. But I mean, she was like talking, it was like on Jay Leno, and she's like, no, this dude, I never really had sex. We sort of did, we were playing around. I'm like, you were like drugged and raped then, if that's what happened. Because
I don't know how you could, was she pregnant?
When she had her first kid or something like that. Yeah. I mean, it was years ago, but wow. My point being is if you're going to make that kind of, don't deny it on that. I'm assuming what it was is that this was my assumption at the time. Her dad was watching because she was like on the Tonight Show. Okay.
Right.
And you know, her dad probably was like, you know, 186 years old or however old, because she was old at the time. She was in her 50s at least.
Okay.
When she did this interview. And my guess is what happened was she knew her parents were watching,
mm-hmm.
and they knew that she would have had to gotten pregnant. And that's the story that she'd been telling them ever since she got pregnant. And
she didn't really bust. So she had to kind of stick with that.
Yeah. And I'm just like, well, you're just a moron. And then if your parents are believing it, they're morons too. So you shouldn't even be reproducing. So, you know, go drink the Kool-Aid or something. Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, man.
So... Anyways, what we were saying, I love nipples.
Segment three is just kind of.
Segment three. Okay. We derailed it right there. Yes. No, but anyways, Olivia Munn, call us. We'll get you figured out. We'll get your career figured out.
I for the record, granted, I'm saying this as a fan. I think she did great in the newsroom. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's always room for more stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And I like to see her do more things, but this is a pretty good start. I think she should kind of step away from the whole Sarah Jessica Parker kind of films. I don't know anyone in her fan base other than maybe some of the girls who would really run to see some of those films. Yeah. I grant it's her decision on what she wants to make, but I wouldn't mind.
You say that as if we're like going to coerce her into doing something.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
well, she can do whatever she wants to. Of course she can.
You know, yeah, I wouldn't mind her seeing her in something more guy friendly.
I mean, are you kidding me? If I had that much control over Olivia Munn, I wouldn't be talking about doing the Transformers movie. I'd be like hardcore point of view porno. Please. No condom, because homie don't play that.
No.
Did I just say homie don't play that?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, my God. Did. Was I, like, possessed from my 1990s self or something?
In living color. In living color, like.
Holy shit. What happened to me?
Oh, man.
I, like, regressed.
It's the late night edition.
Oh, my God. I think I have a mullet now.
A Mario and, like, you.
And like LA gear high tops.
Miami Vice, the shoes with no socks.
Yeah. I'm not wearing socks. I'm not wearing pants anyways now.
Well, that's because it's late.
Because, you know, here's the thing. This is what's funny. Girls can look adorable if all they're wearing are socks. Like a little teeny cute socks or whatever in their pants. If a guy's wearing socks and no pants.
Unless they're in the man cave, it doesn't carry well.
Even if they're in the man cave, it looks ridiculous. It looks stupid, and this isn't even like, you know. I mean, it's not even, you know, whether or not, because guys, for some reason, guys, if in a certain state of undress that would be a woman's state of undress, guys are going to look just stupid.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like did you watch Seinfeld when it was on?
I've seen a lot of it. I can't remember. If you're trying to make me remember a particular episode, you might have to
There was an episode where Jerry was dating a girl and she walked around naked all the time.
Okay.
And she thought that was great because she was beautiful.
Right.
Of course, because Jerry Seinfeld was the producer, so of course all his girlfriends were hot.
Okay.
At least they weren't like 16, like his girlfriend.
Not like a Married with Children kind of thing. Well, yeah, actually, no, Married Children, she was pretty good. They had a great track record with girls they had on there.
No, they had hot, totally hot girls.
Yeah.
But, so she would walk around, and then she, like, was trying to open a jar of pickles.
Okay.
And then at one point, she was squatting down to pick something up, and he was like, it just didn't look right. He's telling her, he's like, no, there's a good naked and a bad naked. I'm watching this girl and be like, I'd watch her open a jar of pickles. I'd totally watch that.
So
like
how's that?
How's it even a bad naked? Well, and then what happened was he decided to start walking around naked, and that's when she's like, Jerry, there's a good naked and a bad naked. And she's absolutely right, because I don't think anyone wanted to see Jerry Seinfeld stage in his life.
And see, that goes right to the heart of Magic Mike. Unless you're a girl, you'd want to run and go see that. But Guys didn't want to run and go see it. At least that nobody I know really wanted to go and run and see that. You know?
Well, but at least Magic Mike, they're good looking dudes. I mean, at least they look good naked. I mean, it's not like if it was like you and me in.
Oh, speak for yourself, man.
You're like, yeah, speak for yourself, baby. I'm a sexy beast, man. There's plenty of me to go around. Speaking of which, I have an idea, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to pass this by you, and you're obligated to donate if you like it, the idea.
Okay.
I'm thinking of starting a Kickstarter campaign.
A Kickstarter campaign?
Are you familiar with Kickstarter?
I believe I am. It's something where you kind of get funding started for
a project? You basically do you present a project.
Okay.
And that you have to, I think you have to get, there's an approval process, I'm sure. Because you can't be like, oh, I want to go on, you know, my project is I'm going to Las Vegas, you know, or anything like that.
And I just need cash. I just need, you know.
Or it can't be my project is I want to bang a hooker. No, it's nothing like that. But you have to do some sort of creative project like a movie or a music video or a book or something in particular that has a beginning and an end. It can't be starting a business, for example.
Okay.
And you go to the site and you can register it and you can say, I need this much money, and people can donate to it. Okay. And if you reach your threshold, you get the money. If you don't reach it, the money reverts to to the original donors.
Okay.
And movies like, I think, what was that? Blue Like Jazz was actually funded with Kickstarter, and they've had other ones. And it's a great way for people to find other artistic expression.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a few of those get started.
In fact, Jeremy Kirk, friend of the show, he just got a Kickstarter campaign funded, and I think he's going to be doing an independent film. I think, I'm not sure.
Okay.
My idea: I want to do a beefcake calendar. With me. Mm. Like a sexy calendar.
Wait, this calendar would be like you every month.
Of course. Well, is there another kind? Well,
So who's your target audience? I mean, other than maybe the misses?
Everybody. Just anyone who has any hormones in their system at all. Women. Single men. I mean, straight men, probably not. I have a huge gay following, so.
Well, I think that's going to be kind of a hard sell. Well.
I want to do it. It's going to be me in sexy poses for every month of the year. And then I was thinking of like doing, and of course I'll have like backup, and the guys will be like ripped, and they'll be like a fireman pose, and then I'll be in my complete pasty white, somewhat hairy glory.
I'm pretty sure all of the crew.
It would be very tasteful. It would be very tasteful. I would not show my penis.
Well, I would hope not.
I'm just telling you, I'm not going to, because I have standards.
I don't know who's going to jump in on that Kickstarter one.
I think it would be huge.
But
would you at least donate like $10 to it? If I sent you the link?
As long as you can give it back to me at some point in time, sure.
That's my plan.
As we're doing this segment, my mind's just rolling. I'm thinking, my God, how did this
happen? I can't get past like the firemen. I mean, like the red suspenders, and they'd be oiled up, and then there'd be me, and I'd be flexing. You wouldn't see any of it because it's all covered in fat. But I would be flexing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're gonna have some firemen, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But are any girls gonna be in this at all?
I would imagine that the target demographic are gonna be people who either one way or the other aren't really all that interested in girls.
Okay.
They'd be either like women or they'd be gay men. I mean, I'm just assuming that not a whole lot of straight guys would buy this calendar.
Okay.
That's just an assumption I'm making.
Well, okay, then you probably will. That can work out.
You feel like people would buy it, so they like look at everyone but me.
You never know. The world is full of different fetishes and.
It'd come with a little thing. Come with a little like sock you could cover my face with.
This is so uncomfortable.
Anyways, that's my plan. Kickstarter.
Wow, you got to put that on the site. Well, we have to mention it during the live tweet.
I do want to do that. I part of it out of just sheer curiosity. If anyone donate, you know what would end up happening? I get funded, And then it'd be like, oh shit, now I gotta like hire a photographer and I gotta hire male models.
If you get that money, then it's gonna be like, hey.
The Vaseline budget alone is gonna be huge.
Trying to unleash the car.
Oh yeah, it'd be like, give it like a really cheesy name. You're like revving it up, car revving it up. You know, like revving it. That'd be great, revving up, and like always have it like with a classic car,
right? Classic car, yeah. A classic car for each vehicle month, or a muscle car for each month.
And I could do a cowboy thing.
How did we get into this?
That's my idea.
Olivia Munn to movies to breasts.
It's
to
me.
Nipples,
I'm going to show Olivia Munn. How she needs, which the direction she needs to go with her career.
Wow, this is wild. This has gone completely Clockwork Orange.
Well, I'm not going to strap you down to the chair and make you.
I hope not.
The key is though with this is you're not allowed to do any sort of thing pornographic. You can't do a Kickstarter campaign to do anything pornographic. So you can't like say I'm going to make a porno movie with Olivia Munn.
You can't. Oh
no. I mean, you could fund yourself. She'd have to agree to it. But I mean, well, if you had money, you could just hire a porno star and videotape it. There was a guy, I actually saw a website in my research. There was some, this guy was just like, you know who he looked like? He always plays a cop in movies. Okay. He sort of looks like, do you remember, this is what he looks like. Do you remember Doogie Howser's friend who was like also in Newsies?
Vinny. He was also in The Sopranos.
Yeah. Right. He looks like an old version of that. Okay. There's a guy, and he's like in that kind of Sopranos. He always plays a cop and stuff. He's a short, I think he's Italian looking guy.
Oh, Dennis.
Maybe. I don't know. Not Dennis Franz.
He was in Crime Story. He was in Manhunter.
Maybe. But this guy, all I'm saying is the guy that I saw on the internet looks like this guy after like some really rough years. I mean, this was not an attractive guy. And what this guy would do is he had a website. I don't know if this may have been the gimmick,
okay.
But it seemed like his site was he would save his money. He'd work and then he'd save up his money and pay a porno star to star in one of his movies, and it was just an online thing. It was basically just him renting porno stars, and so it wouldn't be prostitution. He was then making.
Did he have any activity with the stars?
Yeah, it was him. I'm assuming he had to get tested.
Really? Wow.
Well, anybody, you could be a porno star if you really wanted to. You just have to be tested. I mean, they shut down the industry because you heard about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been hearing a few things this week. What's going on?
Don't ask me how I know. Got a call from my agent. He's like, Leonard, sorry.
No, sorry. Can't do it.
Yeah.
Too many bad things going around.
Yeah. Yep. Syphilis isn't that bad. At least it's curable.
Didn't someone, who was it, the Marquis de Sade or?
Yeah. Maybe yeah.
It was either the Marquis de Sade or maybe it was.
No, it was the guy that movie with Johnny Depp.
Capone? Oh, no, right.
Capone had syphilis, yeah.
Right.
He did have syphilis.
This conversation is absolutely awesome.
I know way more about syphilis than I really should. And syphilis of all things.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of odd because I can't recall the last time I ever heard of anyone in the world ever catching syphilis from anything. I mean...
From anything. I like how you just blanket statement
about
it.
When
that.
Was the last time you ever heard
got
of
syphilis from an ice cream sundae the other day?
You know, seriously. Ice cream sundae with a little syphilis cherry on top. It's just not really heard of.
That's a little nasty. You probably got syphilis from Steven Tyler's vagina face.
Don't kiss it. Don't. I feel sorry for Liv.
My sister went to an Aerosmith concert once, and she was like in the front row,
okay,
and or on the aisle or something. But somehow, she got up to Steven Tyler, and he like kissed her on her cheeks. And I'm like, "Oh, did you wash,
Perel, quick?"
Yeah, she's like, "Oh, his face was so tender, his lips were so tender." I'm like, "Yeah, because they're rotting away from syphilis." His nose was falling off. Anyways.
All I see is RoboCop. Get away from me, man.
Did you hear about the RoboCop remake? That it's an absolute disaster right now?
Oh, my gosh.
I want them to make this movie so bad just because it's going to be so awful.
I think after Fright Night, I kind of grow numb to remakes. You know, I realize remakes are going to be made. no matter what. And there are a few
Friday was awful.
Yeah, there are a few that I've seen that haven't bothered me. Like, I like The Thing. I thought The Thing prequel was actually pretty good. I like that one.
It was better. It wasn't great. It was not at the level of Carpenter's movie, but it was still a pretty decent film.
Good for its own right. Yeah. Fright Night was terrible. Fright Night was fucking horrid. Yeah.
I'm glad somebody else said, because when it came out, people were like, oh, it's actually a good movie.
No. Fright Night was terrible.
And apparently all the reviewers talk like Bane now. Oh, that was a good movie.
Terrible. Don't get me wrong. I like Colin Farrell. I think he's a good actor, you know. Yeah. Total Recall, notwithstanding. But I don't know. Lately, he's been just spewing out some bad movies lately. Hopefully he'll get like another In Bruges and make up for all that. But RoboCop, I can't.
It's going to be an absolute, because the director's complaining. He's basically saying it's hell. He can't do any of his ideas.
Yeah, when your own director tells you he can't work with it, that's something to be concerned about.
Do you know what it is? It's a budget issue. That's why. They put so much money into this. There's so much money tied up in this that the studio won't let control of it go. My guess is that it's too expensive. If it worked, because the original RoboCop, I don't think it cost that much. It was kind of a fringe movie, actually.
Pretty much, but that's Verhoeven. Everything with Verhoeven was violence. I mean, a lot of it was what? A lot of it was you had Roboteens make up with the suits. You had maybe a stop action Ed 209. And the rest of
there's like two scenes of Ed 209, and that's it.
Exactly.
And the rest was
practical. It was all practical effects.
It was all shot in dilapidated buildings.
In Detroit or something if you wanted to.
So I think I think that's what it is. I think they're trying to go too big.
Total Recall. Super big city and no story whatsoever.
That's the other thing. I think that the non success of Total Recall has caused them to wrestle a little more control.
That control is going to hurt them. Guess. I mean, if you don't allow some creativity to the director and the crew, and you're just making the movie the marketers want, that's not going anywhere.
And the thing is, when you make a movie, you budgets have gotten too big. You know, budgets are too big. When you throw $200 million into a movie, the director is just a puppet. Nolan with The Dark Knight Rises. Nolan still had to please. I mean, he had to please the studio. He couldn't go completely off base.
I don't know about that.
If he turned in that cut and it was like 3 hours of Batman moping around and nothing happening and zero action and none of that,
would have had his ass.
They would have been like, yeah, no, that's not
happening. But wait a minute. Well, what about Whedon with the Avengers? I mean, they threw a lot of money on that, and that wasn't really.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the Avengers. I thought the Avengers was great, but. That seemed like more creativity was there
because he was working within his parameters. I mean, I think what Whedon was doing with the Avengers, he was doing exactly what you'd expect for them. They're like, I mean, because I'm sure the studio, when he said, they'd be like, well, we need, he'd be like, look, you got all the characters, you got witty banter between this person and this person, you've got this fight here, you got the characters fighting against each other, you got the big battle at the end. He hit all the things that you needed to hit.
That's true, yeah.
You know, the Avengers wasn't necessarily, when he was making it, I don't think it was a risk. It didn't not fit into what they wanted.
No, he was playing to his strengths. He can do an ensemble, you know, that does kind of work. It's almost like Brad Bird with Ghost Protocol. I mean, granted, it was a big difference from the cartoons that he's done, but it's
an action movie. It was like, you got action? Yes, we got action. Do you have giant IMAX scenes? Yes, we've got those. Do you have car chases? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got car chases vertically falling on you.
Right, with sand.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's the same. It'd be, as opposed to, I can't remember, did we say this in the break? I can't remember whether you said this during a break or in a movie when we were talking about, like, Bourne Legacy. At no point, somebody didn't sit there and be like, I'm surprised Universal didn't step in and be like, there should be way more action.
That's one thing I never understand about the whole marketing thing behind movies sometimes. I would kind of like to see someone who's in a marketing department who actually is a fan of film. Not the marketing of it, but a fan of film altogether. Set and say, oh, wow, this actually feels like what I remember watching, and this is going to be awesome. Or maybe this is a little off course. Have you ever thought about maybe changing this? Because this doesn't feel like the movie we had just saw or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the marketers tend to look so much at the numbers that's all they really care about, and that hurts the creativity of things sometimes.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. The marketers love the marketing of it. They don't love the movies necessarily.
That kind of sucks.
And you, but see, unfortunately, to do that job, you have to, because when you're handed a piece of shit, you still have to market it.
That's true. That's true. You know. You still have to push Harry Potter Part 7.1.
I liked Harry Potter.
7.1? 7.1. That the first Deathly Hallows, with the exception of the story about the Deathly Hallows themselves, that was a slow-ass film.
It was slow.
I'm not saying it was terrible, but it was slow. I mean, that's really hard to. That's really kind of hard to push. I mean,
but it was hard to push as an action movie. I mean, but it had. But again, it had its action moments.
It did. It did. With poor Dobby.
Speaking of action, let's talk about the box office real quick.
Yes, yes.
The Expendables 2 took the weekend again.
I just haven't seen that yet.
$13 million. It's a good movie. It's a great action movie.
Really? It's Simon West, the Tomb Raider director.
He's done some shit, but no, it's a good movie. Actually, Simon West isn't bad. I mean, General's Daughter was.
Oh, yeah, I like that movie. I actually do like that movie.
You like that movie?
I like that movie. I thought it was it's Travolta, but it was okay.
It's Travolta. it's Travolta. He's a good movie. But yeah, it was like, there was none of the new movies in terms of the big new releases. Premium Rush, Hit and Run, The Apparition. Premium Rush came in at number 8.
I saw that. That was not bad, but actually, I liked it, but David Kep is kind of hit or miss with me sometimes. It could have been tighter. And I think Michael Shannon was a little over the top. That was a role that William Dafoe really could have had.
I think all those things were stuff that Kep did intentionally. I think he wanted him to go big. I think he wanted to go kind of campy 90s.
And that's what it felt like. It felt like watching Airborne or someone pointed out, someone online, I don't know who it was on Twitter, or if they ever hear it, I apologize if this is the other person who said it, but someone mentioned that it felt a lot like Run Lola Run. And I have to admit, I kind of agree with that. It was in the sense of not running, but riding, there was a lot of riding there, but it could have been a little better. It was fun. Just watch it, take your brain out your head, sit it in the chair next to you, and enjoy.
Yeah. And then, like, Hit and Run was number 10, and then The Apparition didn't even hit the top 10. It's number 12. So the top 5 were Expendables 2, Bourne Legacy, Paranorman, Campaign, The Dark Knight Rises. That was your top 5. And it's because you're at the end of August. It's a terrible time to release movies. Everyone's kind of getting out of the way. The one that's interesting was that at number 7 was the 2016 Obama's America, which came in.
I heard about that.
Originally, it was tracking as less than Premium Rush, but it actually beat out Premium Rush.
Really?
I think 2016 did a little better, and Premium Rush did a little worse when the actuals came in. What are your thoughts on this? The whole Obama's 2016 Obama's America.
We're trying to get
someone out of politics here, but just more looking at it as a movie.
Right. I just think that a lot of it's kind of like I would call it a smear campaign. I mean, everyone has their right to feel how they want to feel about whoever is running for office, and I can't imagine that everyone is happy with what Obama's done so far. I can't really speak as a politic person, but which is what makes writing about the newsroom so hard. but I guess it does show that there are a few people out there who aren't quite happy with what he's done over the time of his thing, and they're entitled to an opinion. My only fear is that it causes too much reaction, people, that they'll want to do something harmful. That's my only thing. As long as that does not happen.
Are you talking violent?
Yeah, who knows? Okay. You never know when anything can happen.
That's why I was asking.
Yeah, you never know. There could always be someone sitting in their chair watching the movie going, you know what, that's, that Dark Knight shooting happened that last month, so, you know, I wouldn't put it beyond humanity to be that stupid.
You're right. Humanity can be stupid. The thing, there's a whole bunch of interesting things happening with this film, and the first one being that 8 years ago, because if you don't know anything about Obama's, it's 2016 Obama's America. It's basically directed by Dinesh D'Souza, who's a right wing conservative commentator and writer, and it's his documentary examining Obama's sort of his ideology and his upbringing and his background and that sort of thing.
Okay.
That's the general thing, but it definitely skews to the right.
Wow. Okay,
so there's no question about it. It's in line with conservative politics.
Right, kind of like watching something like Fireproof is in line with
Christianity.
Exactly, right.
8 years ago, you had Fahrenheit 9/11 come out, which is the polar opposite of it. It was a very left-wing movie that was done by a very liberal filmmaker attacking a sitting president.
Right.
So I look at it like this. To me, it's kind of like the whole Chick-fil-A thing.
Yes.
And again, not to get political here, but for all the people that are out there at Chick-fil-A saying it's about freedom of speech, it's not about politics, I go, if you can show me the Dixie Chicks album you bought post 2003,
yeah,
or the Kanye West album you bought post 2005,
right,
you have a right to be here. If you can't, then you have no right talking about free speech, because it is about politics. And at least own that and right. Say it's about politics. And it's sort of like, it's interesting, is because 8 years ago when Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, people who in generally were liberal were like, oh, this is the most important movie, you should go see it because it's exposing all this awful things that are happening in the presidency and the politics, right, and blah, blah, blah. And the people on the right, that this is utter hogwash and bullshit, crap. Yeah. You just have a flip-flop here. At this point, this is the conservatives going, this is the most important movie
right,
you
can see version.
Because, you know, Obama's such a terrible person and blah, a terrible president. And you got people on the left going, this is absolute bullshit, it's hogwash.
Right.
And so you have this flip-flop. So I'm kind of like, you know what? This is what happens. You're in a presidential campaign. You didn't get this 4 years ago because there was no incumbency.
That's true.
And there was, because the thing is, Dinesh D'Souza knew that barring unforeseen circumstances, Obama was going to run on the Democratic ticket right. in 2012. And Michael Moore knew, barring unforeseen circumstances, that Bush was going to run on the 2004 ticket. Mm-hmm. So it's basically kind of the same thing. And so on one hand, I kind of have to look at it and be like, yeah, it's a completely partisan film.
Right.
Playing to a very specific audience, and an audience that's going to bust people in and pump up the numbers, which is how movies like Fireproof hit number one, because that movie's absolute utter garbage.
I've heard that it's not all that great. But
did
again,
you not live tweet that with
that
us?
Tied to, I imagine for them it probably works.
It's terrible. Even coming to somebody who's raised in a church in Christianity, even though I think it's terrible. It's a poorly made film.
Really?
Wow. Fireproof is a poorly made film. Did you not live tweet it with it? We live tweeted it.
No, I wasn't there for that one.
And for me, it's not even an issue of religion or politics with Fireproof. It's a shitty movie. Really? It is a badly made film.
Did Kirk Cameron at all? I mean,
no, it's terrible. Oh, it's bad.
Bob and Growing Pains.
Oh, it's awful. It's so bad. It's a terrible film. And I found this with any movie. I've generally found that any movie that gets overtly political,
okay,
or religious,
yeah,
no matter where you're coming from, usually is shit. Because
I don't do well with religious films. I really don't.
Because the message, if
it's too strongly religious, like. Even the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. Don't get me wrong, I like the Angels and Demons, but he get a little heavy handed at times.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like really, like the Omega Code is a great example of a religious driven film. That's not a good movie, and the story or the message supersedes any sort of filmmaking quality to it.
Right.
And that's what I've seen. And so, like, if you talk like political, and I'm going to use examples from both sides of it. When you see movies that are overtly political, that are on the right, you know, for example, you know, something like, they did this this movie, An American Carol, which was hitting on going after Michael Moore, which was
okay.
But I mean, it gets to a point where suddenly they're just then preaching and they're
right.
Like,
it's
let's
kind of
just
like
leave the story behind.
Attack kind of thing. Yeah. Which both sides have done.
But on the other side, if you talk like at the time, you had movies like Lions for Lambs, which was Robert Redford's giant preach fest, which was a terrible movie because it was just
preach.
Well, Derek Luke was one of the soldiers. It was I forget who the other.
There's Redford. It was Cruz, and there was someone else.
Redford, Cruz, and somebody else was in it. But the whole point is that when you get political on either side, now I haven't seen 2016 Obama's America, so I can't actually say about the film, but I would guess that it's a political movie. I've seen enough political movies that this seems to be going for that.
Right.
You know, so, So at this point, on one hand, I have to sit there and be like, "Yeah, it's a political movie. If you're on the left, don't go see this because you're gonna fucking hate it. If you're on the right, then go see it.
You're probably
gonna love it. But on the other hand, I have to kind of poo-poo the people that are raging at this movie because I'm like, you know what? The left had Fahrenheit 9/11 8 years ago,
and you're raging about that one.
Let the right have 2016 Obama's America. It's not gonna do a damn bit of good to the election either way.
No, not really. It doesn't really matter. And at the time, I don't think people even remember having those movies.
No. And now they're touting, and this is the other thing. On the other hand, I'm seeing all these persons like, it's got the best per screen average ever, which it's got a good per screen average. The problem is with these movies that are generally political or religious, they bust people in. Part of the reason, even a movie, which is a good movie, is The Passion of the Christ. Part of the reason that had such high box offices, they'd have church groups would bust people to go see it.
Right. Which kind of forces the numbers.
Yeah, bumps the numbers, and that's fine because it's not like they're forcing people to go see it, but it's not just people discovering this movie,
right?
Whereas people like discovered movies. Like you mentioned, take a movie. I didn't like this, but it was Bridesmaids. That's one that people kind of discovered.
Oh, you didn't like Bridesmaids? Wow! No.
But people discovered it and it got legs, and it kind of had this genuine word of mouth. This movie's not like that. It's getting pushed from a political side,
right? So they just bring people in to watch it just because it's, you know, hey.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is, I also found completely ludicrous is the posturing and sort of trying to make it bigger than it is. Like when Atlas Shrugged came out last year, and that's a bad movie.
They showed the trailer for the second one.
Yeah.
When I went to go see Premier Rush.
I'm sure it's going to be just as bad. The
way I imagine.
It is Atlas Shrugged Part 1 was a terrible movie, and it was completely made on a conservative political mind bent. And it's because the message got in the way, the meaning of it got in the way of actually making a decent film. It was boring.
But wait a minute. I thought that the whole Ayn Rand thing was not something that conservatives would agree with.
No. Ayn Rand is a huge conservative. Figurehead.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm wrong on that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Ayn Rand. So, but when Atlas Shrugged Part 1 came out, it's in its limited release, it had huge numbers. It was like the highest per screen average ever. And then when it expanded, it completely deflated once it expanded, and you had so many people coming to theaters. But that was one that people were bussing to.
Right.
But this one's got a little more legs because it's a documentary, so you can directly attack what's happening
exactly. You don't have right to now. Try to interpret anything. You're being given evidence, clues, things along those lines of a factual
exactly. nature. And plus it has like Obama's name and it has Obama's face on it. You know,
right.
Kind of
so everyone's going to run to that.
Recognized. And so it's doing well, but here's the thing. People, they're trying to make it sound like it's like the greatest thing in the world. It's not, it's like right now it's the third highest documentary of the year. And I'm like, how many documentaries have we had? They've really kind of gone this. It's like behind Bully and it's like behind Bull. Well, maybe Chimpanzee. I don't forget what's in front of it, but it's like Katy Perry's in front of it.
Oh.
And the Katy Perry Part of Me, and like maybe Chimpanzee or Bully, one of the two.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, Bully's pretty. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's what it is. So it's like, yeah, but you're kind of at this point, you know, it's that there's the famous saying, you have to be like the world's tallest midget at that point. And then they're like going, it's the sixth highest political documentary ever. Well, okay, that's fine. But the top four, the top four of the top five are Michael Moore movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the other one is The Inconvenient Truth, which was Al Gore's movie.
Yeah. I'm
now. Now, Obama's America is probably going to... It has a chance of overtaking Capitalism, a Love Story, but probably not Bowling for Columbine. Okay.
I remember Capitalism, you know? A Love Story. Go ahead.
So, yeah, it's one of those things. It's okay, on the left, chill out. Let the right have.
Yeah, they let them have their time. Victory. This probably won't be the last one that you'll see of this kind of film.
Yeah.
And
this will be the last one you see before November. But
well, maybe last one before November, but yeah. it's they have the right to say whatever they choose, whatever they want to say. There's no harm in doing it. My only fear is that, and I guess the fears will also be the same when the other movies that came out, that it just, they'll have someone who has a potential of looking at it too sharply, whose opinions get too polarized, that all of a sudden it's like, okay, we have to take some kind of action. And
I think Obama's safe. I mean,
I would like to hope so.
The Secret Service, they're They have their shit together.
Yeah, they're pretty, they know what they're doing. So
the last actual attempt that even was attempted on a president was Reagan with Hinckley.
I remember
and
that.
Was, that was what, 30 years ago or more?
Yeah, I was a kid when I remember that one.
And you can't tell me that at some point people didn't want to assassinate Clinton, Bush 1, Bush 2.
That's true. That's
Obama.
True.
I mean, people have been wanting, you know, people didn't want to assassinate Reagan through the rest of his 2 terms. So, but on the other hand, I have to say to the right, guys, chill the fuck out. It's not as good as you think it is.
Yeah,
it's not,
kinda, you know, just
it's not a juggernaut.
Opinion, you know, just, you know.
It's not Fahrenheit 9/11, but Fahrenheit 9/11 was also happening because it tied in with the war, which propelled, whereas this is just looking at Obama's background, so it's tied in with the war, and it was Michael Moore, who was a high-profile figure, and he kind of hit it at the perfect time. Obama's America is not going to do as well as that, but it's going to do, and that's fine. I had a radio interview, and they're asking him about it, and I'm like, you know what? They're like, well, what do you think it's going to be? And I'm like, I haven't seen it because they didn't screen it for us. But I pretty much feel that if you're going to be voting, if you're going to be pulling a lever with an R on it,
okay,
in November, you're probably going to like this movie. If you're going to be pulling a lever with a D on it, you're probably not going to like this movie.
Right.
And if you're one of the people on Facebook who are like, oh, fuck all candidates, just don't even bother.
Screw them all.
So, anyways, I just find that fascinating that people that it's kind of making these weird news stories that nobody knows quite what to say about it.
No, it's awkward. Politics for me has always been something hard to talk about. It really has, especially with the whole. Again, I go back to the newsroom. It's just you say one thing, then someone else jumps out of nowhere and goes, oh, you're da, da, da.
Yeah.
You say another thing, and then someone else from the other side jumps out and goes, ah, you're da, da, da.
Yeah. Politics is so political.
Yeah, it is. No matter what you say, someone's going to hate it. Someone's going to hate you for it. You know, you're automatically an ass for feeling however you feel. You know, just I try to stay clear of it.
Yeah. So, anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
I think The Possession probably has an okay chance, but I truth be told, it will probably be Lawless. I think people will just get Hardy is hot off of The Dark Knight Rises, as well as I keep saying Sirius Black.
Gary Oldman. Not Commissioner Gordon.
Right, Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman. I still am not sold on Shia. I like Jessica Chastain from what I've seen of her.
What do you mean for what? She's been like, she was like 58 movies that came out last year.
You know, and I haven't seen any of them. The Tree of Life.
Don't even start me on The Tree of Life.
No, never bothered. Don't even give me sorry, story. I totally missed
the
that
Debt
one.
Was not good.
I hear she's really good, but I haven't seen her.
Take Shelter and The Help.
Michael Shannon? Nope, didn't quite catch that one. But I hear she's really good, and I think the movie will probably be fine. I mean, it Guy Pearce, he's in that as well. Fresh off of Prometheus.
Actually, he's fresh. Oh, no, you're right. It is fresh. I was going to say he's fresh off of Lockout.
Oh, right. Oh, my gosh.
But I think Prometheus came after that. I think Lockout was like April or May.
Yeah. I think Prometheus was the last one he did. But I don't know. I think that one probably will be the one to sell. The audience knows these faces. They want to see them again. I don't know about Shia. But
I think anyone wants. Shia just has the best fucking agent in the business.
He does. He can get him any role he wants to. Seriously, he could get whatever he wants.
Shia LaBeouf and Sam Worthington have made deals with the devil.
Yeah, Sam Worthington gets some really interesting roles. He really kind of lucks out, and he hasn't done enough to warrant half the roles that he gets. You know, but
he's a good looking guy who in the right movie, the movie will do well in spite of him.
Yeah. Except for Clash of Titans, because nothing can save that shit.
I liked Clash of the Titans.
You like Clash of Titans?
I did like Clash of the Titans.
Really? Maybe not Wrath of the Titans. No, I can't even defend that.
Wrath of the Titans wasn't that good.
Neither one of them. I had problems with both. I did. I like Gemma Arterton. She was cool in Clash of the Titans.
Well, yeah, I'd like Gemma Arterton in a lot of things, including my bed and my pants.
But Wrath? I don't know. Wrath? No.
I'm not defending Wrath. You're like going after me.
I can't. I can't defend it. I try to think about good things to say about it, and I can't come up with anything. I really can't.
Yeah.
Except no. I can. It was seeing Liam Neeson and Ralph Fiennes working together.
Oh,
that was cool. That one scene was kind of cool. That was nice. But
the Nazi and Schindler back together again.
Yeah,
the laugh
together
run.
Again. I think that's might be the only thing that worked for me in that film.
No, I think I don't know what's gonna win. Probably the possession might have, but I don't know. It just after the apparition,
it's August. I don't see how anyone's running to horror movies.
The Expendables might win again at $10 million. Or God knows, maybe 2016 Obama's America is going to top the.
You never know. You never know. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. You got the RNC happening this week, so it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. Anyways, let's see. Let's do our Fat Guy Five.
Okay.
And these are in honor of the Oogie Loves, which is. Which is not a movie that adults are going to particularly want to see. This is five kids movies / series that adults can also watch.
Okay. Enjoy.
So the first thing on the list is anything from Studio Ghibli. If you're not familiar with Studio Ghibli, get yourself familiar with Studio Ghibli. This is the Japanese animation studio Hayao Miyazaki is most famous for doing. And he does a lot of his films. The movie, the Academy Award winning Spirited Away is from there.
Ponyo.
Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro.
Right.
They most recently did The Secret World of Arrietty.
The Princess Miyazaki. Mononoke.
Princess Mononoke, yeah. And,
mm-hmm.
Mononoke. And Kiki's Delivery Service.
Right.
And there's one you had mentioned.
Right. My favorite is Howl's Moving Castle. Oh, that's a great one with Christian Bale. I believe it's Billy Crystal.
Well, these are all American. These are all English language dubbed.
Well, yeah, these are dubbed ones. Basically, in this one. I still can't understand the total gist of the story. I know
that's what's so great about it is they're so out there.
They're very much out there. But I kind of like the character of Calcifer, mm-hmm. which is Billy Crystal's character. He's kind of like fire. He's like fire in a fireplace that kind of runs the house, which is always walking.
Yeah.
The house is always walking on stilts. And there is a lady there who befriends this guy named Howl. And I still don't know all the. It's weird. I've seen the movie a few times, and I still can't totally grasp the notion of it of what it totally means. I thought it was a beautiful film. It's a very beautiful film, to, like watch on a weekend.
What's funny about Studio Ghibli is a lot of them are like that. They're gorgeous movies, and you'll have one that you absolutely love. But if you have to try and explain it to somebody. It's not easy.
It's not. You'd have a. It's not that easy. It's really not.
My personal favorite is My Neighbor Totoro.
Really, I don't think I've seen that one.
That one is about a girl who lives with her father and her younger sister, and they go to like a summer house or a new cottage or something like that, and she goes off into the woods, and befriends like a forest fairy kind of creature.
Okay,
these like sort of these magical creatures in the forest, like sort of legendary. Sort of
like pixies or will-o'-the-wisp, like a brave.
But Totoro's this giant fat cat type creature.
Oh, okay, yes, okay, I do know what that is. Yes,
and it's just it's this beautiful friendship that they have, and how they get there is very odd, and it's very hard. So it's almost like trying to describe a dream when you wake up from it,
like Falcorn, and never any story.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that it's like. It's told from such a Japanese perspective that culturally it's very hard for it's very foreign, quite literally, to Americans, but it's fascinating mm-hmm. at the same time. And the other one, Nausicaa, Legend of the Valley of Wind.
I don't think I've ever heard of that one.
That's a great one.
That's a Studio Ghibli?
Yeah, it's from like the '80s. It's
really
beautiful.
Oh wow.
Porco Rosso about a pig who flies a plane.
No.
Wow, it's out there, man.
That reminds me of a movie I saw recently, a cartoon movie. I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's about this kid who has this jetpack, but it's all made out of steam. It's like in the steampunk era.
You're talking about Steam Boy.
It's a Japanese movie, right? Yeah, it's Japanese, right?
Steam Boy. You're talking about
okay,
Steam Boy.
That was cool. I only saw about maybe 15 to 20 minutes of it, but that was a pretty awesome film. Yeah. I don't know if that's good for kids and adults, but that one kind of stuck in my head.
It's a little bit slow for kids, but a lot of the Ghibli stuff is very, very appropriate for kids.
Yes.
The next thing on the list is pretty much anything from Pixar.
Oh.
And yes, fuck you, I like Cars 2 as well. So,
Finn McMissile.
I loved, you know why I loved Cars 2 is because I said this when the movie Bolt came out, which isn't Pixar. It was just Disney.
Yeah, animation. Just Disney. Mm-hmm.
I said, I want to see a movie with that first 10 minutes that they were filming of Bolt fighting the spies. I'm like, I want to see an entire movie of that.
Yes.
That pretty much was what Cars 2 was.
It is.
I don't know it was cars instead of dogs. But
no, I like cars too. I have to admit, I like the whole Finn McMissile angle and Emily Mortimer's other spy car. Yeah. Kind of like that Mater was kind of in the middle of all that, not really aware what was going on, but you were able to fill him in. It had a nice Bond feel to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I think my favorite, I mean, there's so many good Pixar movies. Ratatouille is pretty much tops on my list. Yeah, between that one and Incredibles, I'm a big Brad Bird fan. I have been.
The Incredibles is one of my favorites. Incredibles and Wall-E.
Oh, Wall-E. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think people give Up enough credit.
Oh, Up was beautiful. Yeah. Up is a beautiful movie. The best love story you've ever caught on camera, on screen, not on camera, but on screen.
Right.
And it has such heart, and it's, again, kind of like the Ghibli movies, it's out there.
Yeah.
It's not just a traditional fairy tale, or it goes weird places, because even as great as The Incredibles is, it is a sort of, it's a superhero story. Right. So it kind of hits all these beats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, Toy Stories are beautiful too, but they're very typical. But stuff like Up is out there. Ratatouille is out there.
Yeah, it's kind of different.
Wall-E is out there.
Yeah, I think Brave was the only one that didn't go. I kind of wish Brave had pushed a little bit. Look at me, I loved Brave. I think Brave was a really great movie. I saw it, loved it. You know, the got teary and stuff. You know,
sure.
But
sure.
It's definitely a good movie. It's not. I like to think of the Pixar movies, the only bad apple probably would have been maybe the first Cars. And that's only because I wasn't really in the target audience. But, yeah. I don't know. Brave was good. I like Brave. It could have been a little sharper in some places, but I'd definitely get the Blu-ray if I can.
Yeah. I think I liked Brave. It felt more like a Disney movie than a Pixar movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that was
it. Is kind of how felt more like Tangled,
in a way.
Yeah. A lot like Tangled. Felt very much like Tangled. But that's okay. It's still a good movie. And then the next one on the list is The Iron Giant, another Brad Bird movie. Which is just a sweet little story, but it's something that I think that grown-ups can get a lot out of.
Yeah. Who would have thought Vin Diesel as a cartoon hero?
Yeah, as a robot.
Right. That totally fits. I mean, he really kind of nailed that one. And again, another Brad Bird film. I think that one, I think Warner Bros. Really messed up on that, because I remember hearing that when the movie came out, they didn't market it very well.
No. Yeah. Well, you know what? It came out at the time where animation was suffering, and animation was in a big downslope. Animation was slumping in the 80s, and then you had the Little Mermaid,
okay,
and you had that run at Disney where you had Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, and boom, then suddenly animation was back in the 90s. And right after The Lion King, it just tumbled.
Yeah.
And that's when The Iron Giant was made before.
Just
CGI
afterwards.
Was just starting to come in.
Right.
It was somewhere in that valley. And I think it was one of those movies that it had to be traditional animation, but it's traditional animation has never recovered.
Right. That's kind of like The Prince of Egypt, that other DreamWorks one with Sinbad.
The Legend. And you had like the Stallion of
Cinema. The Road to El Dorado.
Yeah. And those were just not working. And I think that's part of the reason why The Iron Giant stumbled, is because it just... The new wave of animation hadn't gotten to the point where you could do the Iron Giant. Nowadays, you could do the Iron Giant at Pixar.
Yeah, you could. Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't have done it, the Iron Giant at Pixar in 97.
No,
or whenever it came out.
No. And then when you look at it, even Disney doesn't even do animation much anymore. It all is CGI. I think the last animated movie that I can think of...
Winnie the Pooh?
It was Winnie the Pooh. I was going to say Lilo and Stitch, but you're right. Winnie the Pooh is the last...
The last one that Disney did as an actual traditional animation was Princess. Well, they did the last one they did before they closed shop on it was Home on the Range.
Home on the Range,
which was the cows.
The cows.
That's
just
a clever
gosh.
Little. That's a cute little movie.
Whoa!
And they closed shop on that, and then they opened it back up and did The Princess and the Frog a couple of years ago.
Right, that was animated.
Which did well, but it wasn't, because those movies tend to have a lot of investment too.
Right, it wasn't quite Tangled.
Yeah, and then they went, and then Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they do some, they'll still do some 2D reanimation.
Yeah.
But most of it's computer now.
Right. And segueing from there.
Speaking of computers.
Right.
You said the one, these are yours in the list too, for the Kung Fu Panda movies and How to Train Your Dragons, sort of like the. Now I won't say anything from DreamWorks because there's some absolute garbage.
Well,
Shark Tale.
Yeah. Okay, I can't argue. You're right. I take back my objection.
I just went nuclear on that.
Wow, that ranks up there with that. What's the one with the
Trek
the fairies?
3 wasn't good either.
No, the one with the Little Red Riding Hood. They're like action spies or something like that.
You're thinking of Hoodwinked. That was by an independent
star. Oh, okay, because that wasn't working.
Yeah,
but
the first one wasn't bad. The second one was just god awful.
But DreamWorks have had some stutter steps. I mean, they've done pretty good lately. I mean, like again, I love How to Train Your Dragon. That was really awesome. Toothless was just, that was just great. And the Kung Fu Panda ones, Jennifer Yu, I think they won an Oscar for that. I think they actually beat Pixar out for an Oscar this past year. I think so. I think Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah.
But then again, Cars 2 or Brave really wasn't all that.
Well, Brave wasn't up there. I can't remember what won the Oscar for Best Animation this year. It wasn't Cars 2. Cars 2.
No.
But I don't think it was.
I think it was Kung Fu Panda. I think Kung Fu Panda actually got it. I could be wrong. If someone knows, just tweet us and correct
us.
Well,
I can also just check online.
Well, yeah, of course.
Because that's how awesome I am. I would say, though, I like both the Kung Fu Pandas because those both surprised me, actually. I thought both of them were going into it, and I thought it was gonna suck.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought it was gonna be a terrible movie, and both of them were just
really
knocked
great.
My socks off. I
yeah.
loved them.
They were good for kids and for adults.
Incidentally, Rango is what won Best Picture.
Oh, Rango! My gosh, I forgot about that.
But Puss in Boots was also out last year too, and that was nominated, and that was a cute little movie.
Yeah, Puss in Boots was pretty good. I enjoyed that. Felt like Zorro in a way.
The O cat?
Yeah,
My kids still do that. If I do something, somebody does something, they're like, and then the last one on the list is, and this is, it's a TV movie, but it's a movie nonetheless. It is Phineas and Ferb Across the Second Dimension.
Yeah, I caught this yesterday, actually. I'm a big, huge Phineas and Ferb fan. It airs on Disney XD. Basically, it's about these two kids who have the summer off, any summer. And they just spend the whole summer coming up with things to do so that they're not bored. They have a platypus named Perry, who by day...
Ancient P.
Right. Who is just a regular platypus by day, but when the kids aren't looking, he actually is a secret agent that helps to thwart the evil Heinz Doofenshmirtz, who is always trying to plot up these weird gadgets. He's got the Smartinator and the Shrinkinator and all these rays that kind of will do something, but Agent P always kind of stops them. In a way, it's kind of like the Powerpuff Girls, only Disney-fied. And they made a movie where Doofenshmirtz creates a ray that opens up an alternate dimension, and Agent P gets revealed to the brothers, Phineas and Ferb, that he actually is a secret agent, and they end up getting sucked into that other dimension and need to speak to their other selves in order to get out. It was a really fun movie, a really fun film, and actually the whole climax of the film, when you watch it, reminds me very much so of The Avengers this past summer. It's very similar in a way.
What's great about this series is it's very irreverent, and the reason it made this list is because the whole Phineas and Ferb series really connects with the audiences, adults as well as the kids. They have a lot of irreverent comments and jokes that only parents are going to get, and it's fun, and it plays on its own conventions, and it plays on its own tropes and its own things that happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie just continues with that, and that's it's a great movie. It's a lot of fun. If you've never watched Phineas and Ferb, go watch Phineas and Ferb. Anyways, let's move on to the honorable mention, which was your pick. And the reason it's not on the list is because it's not a movie. Because the movie, there was a movie, and the movie sucked ass.
Oh, Shyamalan.
Yes. So you can do it. This
was your response. My choice as the honorable mention is actually Avatar: The Last Airbender. It's aired on Nickelodeon for a number of years now, and it's basically the story of Aang, I believe his name is. Mm-hmm. He is the last Last Airbender. Basically, it takes place in a world where there are ruling clans that govern different elements of nature, fire, water, earth, and it's got a lot of really interesting characters, and although the story is meant for kids, a lot of adults have really gelled with the story. And actually, when the movie was made, which was when I think 2 years ago,
almost exactly. It came out in July of 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it was very anticipated, we'll say, but it didn't quite hit the mark.
It did not deliver.
Yeah, it didn't quite deliver. Musically, it was good. James Newton Howard had a great soundtrack on that, but that's about the best thing of it. But really, if you have a chance to ever check out the show, it's definitely worth watching. You might want to watch it from the very first episode, though, because if you jump into the middle, you might find yourself a little lost. But the kids just eat it up, and so do a lot of grown-ups.
Do you watch Korra, The Legend of Korra? Because I know that's...
No, I haven't seen them. I've heard a lot of raving about it. I think that
Meryl's a huge fan.
Yeah, he's a huge fan of it. Yeah. So I know he really likes that a lot, and I've heard good things about it. I haven't heard anything bad about it. That I heard that the season finale that of this past season was supposed to be really impacting. So I'm pretty sure the writing can't be bad at all.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on, and we'll do when we come back, we'll talk about DVD reviews. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We had a long, long middle segment there. Didn't talk about Lawless at all. Not really. Talked about a lot of other things that aren't worthy of being mentioned on the radio.
But we've got
limited time here. We got a lot of things to talk about here in this segment. So what do we have coming up next, Leonard?
We have the world famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. Yeehaw. So... the ones I want to highlight, there's a lot. Okay, so first of all, there's some theatrical ones. Battleship is out. Not a good movie, but you know what?
Oh, my God.
It's better on video than I expected because you got to get through that first 40 minutes, and then the aliens show up, and it's kind of cool. The Pirates, Band of Misfits, a very cute animated film. Definitely worth seeing. It was a lot better than I thought it would be. The people from Aardman Animation did it. There's also Life Happens, if you're a big Kristen Ritter fan. She sort of co-wrote this movie about a woman who's a single mom, and she's dealing with the challenges that throws at her. There's Think Like a Man. This was another theatrical film about Steve Harvey's book. Actually, kind of a cute little film. It did surprisingly, incredibly well in the spring. It was one of these runaway hits. Made a lot of money. Headhunters, I've not seen. I've heard a lot of good things about it. It's a foreign film that's definitely worth checking out. There's a couple Blu-rays that Universal has released that are new for their 100th anniversary. You've got Harvey with James Stewart, who sees a giant rabbit. Also have Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein on Blu-ray, and you also have Airport on Blu-ray. So there's a bunch of those if you want to add to your collection there. There's a couple TV shows I thought I'd mention. Mm-hmm. You got Sons of Anarchy, season 4 is out. The new season is going to be coming up soon. 2 and a Half Men, that's the one, the new season with Ashton Kutcher. That one is out. Season 9 is out. And Once Upon a Time, which is the ABC series about the fairy tales kind of have come to life, and they live in this town that they don't realize are fairy tales. That one does pretty well. I'm not a huge fan, but that one actually had really good ratings. Then Homeland season 1, that's the one with Homeland Security, and then there's
Claire Danes.
Yeah, Claire Danes and that British guy with the red hair, that British ginger, who I don't think plays a Brit in this one. But and then there's In Plain Sight, which is a USA show. Season 5 is on DVD. You've got a couple you wanted to highlight.
We also have Boardwalk Empire, season 2 of that one. There's an HBO's show with Steve Buscemi, which I believe recently won an Emmy, actually. Mm. And we also have The Walking Dead.
Did it win a Steve Buscemi?
Yeah, I believe Steve Buscemi either won an Emmy or he won a Golden Globe for that.
I was making a joke. It was a Steve Buscemi Emmy.
Yeah, exactly.
Ha ha ha. How dare you not get my jokes? You're never coming on the show again.
I'll get your jokes. I will.
I'll get them later. I'll pick them up. God darn it.
Yeah, I really wanted to get those. Yeah. And we also have The Walking Dead Season 2, which a lot of people are looking forward to. I know the whole Sophia angle was stretched out a little long, but that's what the fast-forward button's for.
Yeah, I absolutely hate The Walking Dead.
I love The Walking Dead. I do, but I just that one storyline just took too long.
Was Sophia the little girl that got lost?
Yeah, that took too long. I mean,
she should have been eaten. If you get lost in the zombie apocalypse, you deserve to be eaten.
Exactly. You know what we tell you? Stick by our side, stick together. Don't run off. And where did she go? She runs off into the woods. I would have doubled back around a car and climbed onto a truck or something.
I don't like it. I'm not a fan of The Walking Dead. I never have been. I always thought it was weak.
Really?
But
wow.
I'm in the minority on that, so oh well.
That's okay. We're all entitled to our opinions, and opinions are good.
You're allowed. anyways, the stinker of the week is The Lucky One. This is, of course, Zac Efron as a soldier coming home from war who falls in love with a woman whose picture he found on the battlefield and tracks her down.
It's not Vanessa Hutchins, is it?
Taylor Schilling, who's very pretty, and she's a good actor, but oh, it's just it's a Nicholas Sparks movie.
Oh, that's better.
It is everything you would expect from a Nicholas Sparks movie. It is total emotional pornography.
You know, I kind of think that Nicholas Sparks kind of runs off the same template over and over again.
Oh, he does.
It's guy hurt.
He does. Huh? It's always the same. It's a stalwart, you know, guy who just loves so much, and they're torn apart by circumstances beyond their control, and somebody dies in the movie.
Yeah, somebody dies. It's always Nicholas Spark. He loves that.
It's awful. It's so bad.
But it sells books, though. The girls love that.
Twilight sells a lot of books, too, but that's garbage.
Same with Fifty Shades of Grey.
I mean, at some point, my wife was telling, my wife read them. She's like,
she did?
I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, everything she told me, I'm like, this is just dirty books. There's nothing new with this. That's the thing. I mean, I don't have a problem with it, but it's nothing new.
Those books are all written by Sutter Kane. That's what I believe.
They'll make your eyeballs bleed. Yes. Anyways, the review wrap up, all movies, none of them got screened. The Possession, Lawless, The Oogie Loves in the Big Blue Adventures, all get preemptive sucks. Next week, we've got The Words, maybe In the Cold Light of Day, as I don't know if I'm going to see it, and Toys in the Attic, a stop motion animation film that's a smaller little film to check out. Fat Guys in the Movies is the place to go. Leonard, tell us where you are and who we can, all that good stuff.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter under the handle Cavatica. That's Cavatica. I write on Through the Shattered Lens, which can be found at Unobtainium. That's like the mineral. Unobtainium13.com.
All right. And with that, we are going to go for another week. We'll talk to you guys later.
Take care, guys.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Oh Snap with Kevin and Meryl. Celluloid Spotlight with Marilyn Hash, plus many more. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.